I'm just going to have to turn that extractor fan off because it's really noisy. Can you hear it?
I can't hear it now, but it's...
No. Oh, bollocks. Last time you asked me to turn it off because it was really noisy. I just derailed my own thought train. But yeah, I mean, just let me turn it off because it's doing my head in.
It's all right.
And it's actually a dehumidifier, not an extractor. Just so you know.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Sometimes it's not about how you get the job done, just that you do get it done. And there was plenty of that on show for Manchester City on Sunday. A 2-0 win at Nottingham Forest looks comfortable from the outside, but the chewed fingernails and fidgeting throughout the first 70 minutes tell a totally different story. On today's Blue Moon podcast, we'll discuss that victory in the Midlands and we'll look ahead to the next game as City face another Midlands team in Wolves at the Etihad. We'll hear from Dave Azzopardi from Talking Wolves ahead of that one. And since Sunday was a very nervy watch, we'll also discuss what makes a vile end-of-season narrow victory. Dom Farrell and Adam Monk will help us nail down all the elements of a horrible-to-watch 90 minutes a bit later on. I'm David Mooney. Joining me this week, I've got City fan Chris Higginbottom.
I hope you're all right.
Not too bad, thanks, Chris. And from statcity.co.uk, Adam Carter.
Hello.
How are you doing, Adam? Well?
Yeah, well as we can be.
Good. Chris, are you good?
Yeah, I'm all right here in my fabric igloo.
So, do you want to explain why I've made you build that?
Yeah, apparently the acoustics and the sound quality weren't quite up to scratch. So when this happens, Mooney has me running around performing a number of tasks, one of which involves building a cushion wall around the sides of my monitor screen, which is close to resembling, as I said, a fabric igloo. It's quite cosy, but... I just hope nobody can see me from anywhere.
Yeah, and we've used a different microphone in the end anyway, so it doesn't really matter. You can take it down if you want.
No, it's there to stay now.
It's there to stay. Good. Before we get going, Adam, I know you're not... I don't understand how this works, given that we're the same age, but how are you not a Simpsons fanatic?
It just bypassed me. I think BBC Two was too far on the remote to go from BBC One, so I stayed there instead.
Yeah, but Erling Haaland gave us a Homer Simpson impression this week. So either of you two got any good impressions? Chris, you must be a man that's got impressions.
Well, I mean, this might be recency bias, David, but Erling Haaland
as Homer Simpson is it?
No, I mean, I scored a hat-trick on Tuesday.
you did indeed. Yeah.
I could rustle up a myopic painting of some water lilies.
As you mean, you're an impressionist is what you're telling me.
Sorry, that wasn't very good, was it? I thought that was the Monet shot.
Oh, God. So, no impressions is what you're
saying. Well, actually, if Mooney Penny, if you'd like me to provide a lesh for shisha shansha, I can have a go at a little Sean Connery.
Ah, Roger Moore, good. Very good. Yeah, Adam, have you got any? No?
No, I just do a good impression of someone who knows what they're talking about on a football podcast, but absolutely doesn't.
You're wrong on that one. You do a good impression of someone who doesn't know what they're talking about on a football podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, there we go.
Too kind.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so let's actually get to talking about the football. Like every week, this episode of the Blue Moon podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Green King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why? For one, you could wash every televised City game down with delicious food and refreshing beverages. And with 900 sports clubs dotted around the UK, chances are you're within walking distance of your local Green King. Let's be honest, watching the football is way better with your friends and family, so get the squad together for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere worth sharing. So if you're not at the Etihad for this weekend's match with Wolves, why not head over to your nearest Green King pub and watch it with your mates there? And don't forget to download the Green King Sports app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there is a game on. It's hard to talk, I think, about the Forest game, Adam, without kind of taking into context of the day before it as well. So, going into it, how were you feeling after seeing what had happened with Spurs and Arsenal?
Yeah, well, when Arsenal went 3-0 up, the first thing I was thinking was about goal difference. Now, obviously, goal difference has been a bit unobtainable in recent weeks, and they've always had that ahead of us. But when it went to three, I just thought, well, that's definitely out of reach. And then I listened to your episode of Let Me Talk this week, and you actually pointed out that we'd actually close the goal difference because of what had happened subsequently at the end of their game and the result of ours. So that was a nice little silver lining, because when they went 3-0 up, I was just thinking, oh God, we're going to have to do it the hard way. I'm all for favours. I want to win it as early in the season with everyone else beating our rivals so we don't have to do anything. So that's the fact that we're going to have to do it the hard way and it's going to go right to the wire. It was just like, just the anxiety was building before the game, and that just absolutely added to it. I didn't take too much solace from the fact that Spurs got two goals back. I just think we're at the stage of the season now where both teams are going to get the job done regardless of what's thrown at them, and that's even more anxiety inducing for me.
Yeah. Did the fact that Arsenal hung on give you any extra sense of nerves, Chris, or were you just nervous anyway? I don't know, were you even nervous ahead of Forest? I don't know.
Not massively nervous against Forest. It was I would have been a lot more relaxed if Arsenal had drawn, and they did seem to be quite lucky in the way they went about that victory, in terms of like disallowed goals and stuff like that. But I caught the end of the Arsenal game. I was putting some washing out. It wasn't really affecting me. That's just part of the international playboy lifestyle I lead, listen to football while doing laundry. As for the Forest game, I just wasn't that. I think I'm kind of, I don't know if it's probably the wrong term, but like I'm pre-nervous for Spurs, which is maybe taking my eye off the ball. I know you're supposed to not have your eyes on games ahead of the next one, but I'm not assuming we're going to win against Wolves, and I wasn't assuming we're going to win against Forest, but I don't have that sense of jeopardy that I know I'm going to have against Spurs. It's kind of a looming spectre on the horizon, that one. The Forest game, when it was on, I mean, they missed some sitters, didn't they? But even then, I don't know, maybe I'm just growing more numb and devoid of the feeling and emotion as time goes on. But it just wasn't rattling me. I just felt a sense of inevitability about the Forest win.
Serenity and calm was not a feeling that I was getting. Wow, I'll be honest with you. Yeah.
No,
it wasn't bothering me. I mean, it was a bitty game. It wasn't nice to watch. We weren't particularly fluid. There was sort of sparse moments of quality that dotted the match, and loads of poor football from both teams. But yeah, it's more of an irritating spectacle than anything that kind of had me on pins or out. But
yeah, Adam, as Chris alluded to there, with kind of it would have been better if Arsenal had drawn, sort of thing. If Arsenal got away with it against Spurs, I think it's fair because City probably got away with it against Forest.
Yeah, 100%. We probably deserve to lose if they take their chances, and that would have been an absolute blow. But given what the team have had to do and how tired they'd be and how much fixture congestion there's been, these type of performances are going to happen. The lineup didn't lend itself to a fluid game even before the game. You know, you find out that Foden's not playing, that Diaz is ill, that Stones isn't starting, that Haaland isn't starting or fit enough to start. And you just think, where's the performance coming from in what's left over? And I think we were just lucky that Forest seemed to just keep giving us the ball back when we lost it for some bizarre reason and decided that they weren't going to
finish
the chances. Yeah. So I just think it was a perfect cocktail for us in terms of the result and absolutely not for the performance, because it was a shocker. But we played better last year and only came away with a point. We played worse this year and got all 3 points. So it does even itself out over the course of a few seasons, which is a new cliche I've just made up.
Yeah, funny old game. Chris, as the performance suggests, though, I mean, Guardiola hinted at this. In fact, Guardiola said exactly the same thing as Adam just said in the press conference afterwards. You know, they played better last year than they did this year, but last year they only drew. There's this argument over points versus performance, but ultimately, when it's City and the way that City play, a good performance actually lends itself to City getting the points. Where, like, it's performances like the one on Sunday where City tend to drop points, isn't it? So it's like, for City, performance and points tend to come hand in hand.
Yeah, true. But again, I just felt that against Forest, although we weren't at our best, we had more in the tank. It's like, we know we're knackered, so we're not going to go full tilt. And we still had options on the bench to change the flow of the game and add a bit more zip and a bit more zing to it if needed, as happened with Haaland coming on. I just wasn't fazed by it, which is not like me, to be honest, but that's just how I felt.
Yeah, new Chris, that's what it is.
Oh no, can you sit with me for the Fulham game, please? Because that's going to be exactly the same for me.
Fulham, that's walking apart, that mate.
Oh mate, you're
you've
the one.
Changed.
Yeah, you're the one who last season gave us the title of one of the episodes, Treading into Jinxville, and here you are, just like smashing the sign on the way in this time. Yeah, Adam, for the control of the game. I mean, Higgy mentioned it there, Haaland coming on. Why do you think City struggled so much throughout that game? Until it was 2-0. As soon as it went to 2-0, I was like suddenly everything was relaxed, and I was like, well, they're just going to see this one out now. But before that, I had no confidence that they would do that at 1-0.
Yeah, I don't like Doku away from home, and I'll probably get slated for that. I think I was pretty much as resigned to the fact that it was going to be one of those games when I saw the lineup. Walker had been complaining about the pitch. Obviously, we didn't know that at the time, but so if you have a right back who's complaining about the pitch, so he's decided that it's too dry, there's risk of injury. You've got a very attack-minded person in front of him who isn't, not through a want of trying, but isn't going to protect him as much as someone else might have in the squad. Then all the danger was coming down that side of the pitch. So it was kind of inevitable because of the personnel that was available. I know there was options from the bench, but those options from the bench weren't fit enough to start. So we were kind of set up for, you know, a tense game until we had that breathing space of a two-goal cushion. And luckily it came when it did. And I think, you know, when you are able to bring people like Haaland on, that is the difference that changes the game from a struggling, mediocre performance to, if you look at it in black and white on paper, it's a 2-0 win and we've closed the goal difference on Arsenal. So it's light and day between the actual realities of what happened on the pitch and what the perception will be outside of us stressing about that game, because everyone else probably just thinks we just walked it again.
Yeah, got the job
and cruised.
Yeah.
Do you not think Forrest just looks shit though up front?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's
that was what was sort of allaying my fears in real time watching the game. It's just like, Hudson-Odoi was just like, the fishing ball's out of the Trent right now, probably, with half of his shots. I mean, and Chris, I mean, it helps that Chris Wood is evidently a massive City fan. Some of those attempted finishes, I was just like, come on, lads, this is like, they're not troubling us here.
Yeah, you wouldn't have missed them, would you, Chris?
Well, quite possible that I would have, but only if I was playing City.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you this, Chris, because Adam asked me to ask, has Haaland scored a more important goal for City? Because Adam asked me to ask that question, I'm not giving him the satisfaction of being able to provide an answer.
Well, I did read the notes and I saw that you'd actually annotated it with, because Adam had asked you to ask. So I just thought, well, at least I'm not going to be asked that, so I don't have to think of an answer to it. So you've stitched me right up there.
Excellent. So I've stitched you both up in effect.
Yes, well done. You absolute seamstress.
Well, go on then, Adam. Give us your answer.
Yeah, well, I'm saying in context of just a goal in isolation, in that I can only think of maybe the Fulham penalty last year or the Crystal Palace penalty last year. That game was on a knife edge, regardless of how poor Forrest were and how assured Higgy was in his fabric igloo that he was safe and sound in there. For me, I've not felt that relief of a Haaland goal since any time this season, and that might be recency bias, but that's why I asked the question, and I'll put it back to Higgy now, because now I'll give a bit more context.
He scored the third, didn't he? Made it secure.
Yeah, but my argument would be hypocritical, because I'd say 2-1 is fine, but also 1-0 was fine as well at the point of this. But I just think in isolation, it we're further on in the season than West Ham. There's more chance to recover from a defeat at West Ham when we played them.
Yeah, I get that.
So that's just talking about the relief of a Haaland goal, and we've needed this moment from him, and he took the mantle of a big game player on the weekend, and I think that's been lacking recently. So that's where my question came from. So Higgy, has he scored a more important goal in terms of game changing?
I don't know, really. Like I say, I'd not researched the question thinking it was going to be yours. But I mean, your most important goal is always your next goal, of course.
Mm. Oh, that's a philosophical
love that
there, because you've not scored your next goal yet, have you?
That's the most important one.
Yeah, yes, you've never scored it though. That's the problem. How can it be the most important if it doesn't exist?
Tomorrow never knows, David.
Yeah, well, in terms of Haaland, Adam, I mean, you talk there about like what you've needed, what you've wanted to see from him. And there's been a debate over the past kind of few months where it's been around, well, you know, if he isn't scoring goals, he's found a bit harder this season. He's still scored a lot, but has found it a bit harder. And he's not really getting involved in the build-up and not really occupying defenders, then why is he there? And then you look at the Forest game, and that's exactly why he's there, isn't it? He opens up the space for De Bruyne to operate.
Yeah, exactly. So Alvarez wasn't able to occupy the defenders as much in the preceding 70 minutes before that goal. And it's just a fear factor. They evidently changed their defensive shape when Haaland came on. They retreated a lot further back. They were literally, they've seen what he's done to teams like Luton in the FA Cup this year. When Haaland is allowed that link up with De Bruyne, they've seen what happened. It almost just petrified them a bit because their emphasis changed notably when he came on. I don't profess to be a tactical genius because it was physically it passed the eye test in terms of how much space we were perceived to have.
Yeah. So, we were just higher up the pitch, weren't we? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It put that argument to bed, didn't it, really? It just brought it perfectly into focus. This is how it works.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah. Hey, Gabe, I mean, when you look at his performance as well, it's only 20 minutes, but I thought he looked a hell of a lot sharper and a hell of a lot fitter than recently. It's like he's been carrying an injury, maybe, and then all of a sudden that wasn't hampering him anymore.
Yeah, the shackles were off, weren't they? He looked totally back to himself. Even, you know, he took the ball onto his right foot confidently and just stroked it in. I mean, it's not his strongest foot, because he's been bemoaned in the past for trying to, you know, turn like the QE2 and get it onto his left foot at all costs and do the same finish. But he was just happy to have a little dance, sit the defender down and just bang. And the joy and the happiness with the little woohoo was absolutely brilliant. So yeah, he's clearly a lot happier in himself and a bit freer in terms of movement and fitness. So yeah, great to see, and good timing for the team.
Yeah, if I still had the music license and could still play copyrighted music on the podcast, I would have probably this week mixed that woohoo with Song 2 by Blur. But, you know, can't do
it.
Very
good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Can't do it. Let's talk Guardiola, Adam, because he's one that I've had question marks over this season. He seems a lot more solid defensively, certainly in the last few games. And he cleared one from behind Ortega, I think, in the second half against Forest. And he's added goals as well this last few weeks.
Yeah, I was an early adopter for Guardiola, I must admit. If you look at my Fantasy Premier League team, it is cigarettes and Guardiola. So I was on board from the off. Don't look at my points, though, because I'm absolutely shocking at that. But
don't smoke either, kids.
Very good. But I'm glad to see he's getting his rewards now, because there's been a lot of pressure on him, a lot of people wondering whether he's the right fit for us. And I think it was always the case that he was going to be a longer-term signing. He signed a long contract. He's a young defender. So I don't think anyone was expecting him to rip up trees this season. And he certainly didn't in the first half. I must admit that, being a fan from afar from before he played for us. But it's lovely to see him now. Like, he's released some quotes this week saying how he feels at home here, that he's got everything he needs to succeed here. And I think in the next few years, we'll be building the defence around him. And he's already showing that he can change games with a bit of a goal scoring attribute as well. Because that goal came, his like Haaland's goal, that goal from him came when we really needed it. We took advantage of them being a player light, which isn't great for the aesthetic, but I'll take it. Like I say, I want help from everywhere. So if they've got a player off the pitch, I'll take that.
Corinthian spirit.
So he's even adding goals to his game now, which is perfect. And he was doing some weird marauding runs into the final third multiple times in the first half, and he was our furthest forward player at parts. I was like, get back, come on, let's sort your defensive work out first before going up there. And then he pots a header in, and I'm like, well, he knows better than me.
Yeah, you know a centre-back settling in at City when they suddenly find themselves as the furthest player forward a couple of times in the game. It means they're getting it, what they need to do.
Well, you say that, but it was also quite refreshing of him to come out in the press afterwards and say of the best coach of the not only the modern era, but perhaps of all time, that I just didn't know what the manager wanted me to do.
Love that.
I didn't have a clue what was going on. I was like trotting up there and didn't really know what was happening. And we had a word at half time, and it was much clearer at that point. It's like, fucking get your message across before the game, perhaps, Pep. Just a tip there from me.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, Higgy for Guardiola, he really looks to have settled in the last few weeks, doesn't he? Because he's been solid, much more solid defensively, and at the same time, he is offering something in the final third now that maybe he didn't really have his head around earlier in the season.
I think that's a confidence thing. It's always been in his range. Like he's a really good player, good footballer. Not just a defender, maybe not. Even a defender in that position that he's being played in, which again is, you know, the fact that he's a good player going forward might detract from his capabilities as a defender. But I think he's got a good excuse there, the fact that he's been played out of position. I've always been an admirer of his, to be honest with you. And I felt a bit sorry for him when he's being slagged off because he is being played out of position. But going forward, he really does offer us something very, very useful. And to see that he's got confidence enough to start having a few pops at goal can only do us and him the power of good. And it was a great header and a lovely celebration. What's going on with the nose tweaking?
I'm not really sure. Yeah,
Guardiola tweaked Walker's nose against Brighton, was it?
Mm.
And then Walker nearly pulled Guardiola's nose off. Yeah. It's like, do that anymore, mate. You're going to cause him some damage. Yeah. I've all got as sturdy a beak as you, Kyle.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But if you were going to have your nose pulled by one member of the City squad, who would it be, Adam? Who would you like it to be?
I think Alvarez would be nice and gentle. So I think he'd, maybe Bernardo couldn't do too much damage.
Yeah, Bernardo couldn't reach you, could he, Higgy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, both of us, so I'll take that.
Yeah,
probably not. Hopefully not. I probably choose De Bruyne to just
really
beautifully assist all the mucus out that's congealing currently in my.
You won't want Edison having a go, would you?
Just drop kick my head off. I think.
Yeah, yeah. You don't imagine Edison's quite like gentle enough. Yeah.
You've killed him, and he'd be like, "Well, if in doubt."
Now, if you don't use a VPN and you'd like to, then you could try NordVPN, and you can do it while helping the Blue Moon podcast as well. NordVPN is easy to use. You can connect with one click, or you can turn on Auto Connect to keep you protected automatically. There are more than 6,000 servers in 111 countries, so you can change your virtual location easily. And you'll get amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. Even better, if you subscribe, then you'll get the use of your VPN on 6 devices. And Nord supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, and even your Android TV. You can use Nord to safely access your favourite streams and other content from home when you're abroad. You can switch your virtual location to access apps and websites in other countries. So don't let those paid subscriptions go to waste while you're overseas. If you're going to miss one of City's games, for instance, because you're not in the country, you can easily stream it with a VPN. Should you go somewhere that censors material, then you can also get access to social media and services that aren't available in that country as well. On top of that, you can secure your connection on public Wi-Fi. So if you're in an airport or hotel or cafe, then you can make sure you're browsing safely and securely with NordVPN. If you want to try it, you can do it for the same price as one cup of coffee a month, and you can help the Blue Moon podcast at the same time. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/bluemoon. Our our link will also give you 4 extra months free on the 2-year plan. There's also no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, meaning that you can try it before you buy it, and if you're not satisfied in the first 30 days, you can get your money back. Head over to nordvpn.com/bluemoon for more details and to sign up for 4 extra months free. We've put the link in the episode description as well to make it easy to find. It's nordvpn.com/bluemoon.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Speaking of Edison, he left the City ground in a sling. Guardiola said it didn't look good, but the news now seems that he's trained and everything's all right, which I think, Higgy, it's a little bit harsh on Ortega because he's been great this season. And I feel like the chance to see out the season would have been quite nice for him. But at the same time, like, Edison's just the number one and you can't do anything about that if he's fit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that Ortega's a better goalkeeper, but he's just not as good a midfielder. So that's why Edison gets the nod, because he is still a really good goalkeeper, but no one can really touch him in terms of, you know, passing range, calm on the ball, a passing choice.
Nose control.
Yeah. He's starting to get a few injuries these days. I don't know if... Why that is. I mean, you could attribute a few of those to his gung-ho style and just going at people, but happy for Ortega to come in either way.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, Adam, that, I mean, nobody is worried at all about Ortega, and he's absolutely earned that status given the performances he's put in this season. But even so, it just seems like a new deal's unlikely. The wages that he wants and the game time, like, he's going to go somewhere and be a number one, isn't he, and that's it.
Yeah, he's too good to be a number two, and it's annoying because he do play enough games of a season. You'd expect us to be in the latter stages of all the competitions we enter that could give him enough game time to satisfy him, but he's too good for that in the hope that we do get far in latter stages of competition so he gets some game time. So we can't begrudge it him either. I think it's a weird position to be in, to have two top goalkeepers, because our second choice keepers have never been... not really ever pushed the first goalkeeper into, you know, fighting for a jersey. It's always been we've had a number one and the number two's just come and go as soon as they come. So I think it's a really peculiar situation to be in, to have two number twos. I don't think rotating keepers every other game works. I think there's been some evidence to suggest that might be an option, but I don't think Pep or should go for that. But it's just a shame because he's so good. And whenever he comes on, I don't dread that. I mean, you don't really see a drop-off in performance. It's only ever a drop-off in the build-up. But it makes up for that with the saves.
Yeah, City would have been stuffed without him this season, wouldn't they?
Yeah, because it's weird to have a goalkeeper injured that many times. And you just wonder whether this is Edison's body getting older, that we're going to need a better understudy more and more as he gets older. But I don't think he's good enough to displace Edison. But I'm never gutted when he does.
Yeah.
That's what we should be saying to him. Look at Edison, he's always injured, mate. Yeah. Just sign, you get loads.
Bide your time, yeah. Sign the thing.
Yeah. Kick him and train him.
Yeah. Now, as we've talked about already, it wasn't an easy watch as City beat Forest on Sunday. It falls firmly into the category of title running matches that are absolutely vile. So this week, I sat down with City fan and presenter for 442, Adam Monk, and speaking first here, journalist and also City fan Dom Farrell, to find out exactly what makes a grim game to watch.
I think the main hallmark of a game that's hard to watch is it's like that Burnley game, which is one of the ones we're going to discuss from 2019, because... midway through the second half on Sunday, I messaged Sam Lee, who was all, the other side of the press box at City Ground, saying something along the lines of, this is absolutely rank. This is Burnley levels of horrible. After I sent that message, I'd looked up from my screen and saw Erling Haaland roll the ball in the net, so that was fine. Actually, City have now put out this clip of them keeping the ball for 2 minutes and this wonderful move leading up to that. Despite being in the ground and purportedly covering the game, my head had clearly fallen off at that point because I have no memory of City having the ball in complete control for 2 minutes before Haaland scored. I was like, this is... I think I've not slept very well and I had a lot of coffee, which doesn't really add to the whole keeping your anxiety in check. But yeah, I think for whatever reason, that Burnley game is a benchmark, but I thought the weekend at the City ground was pushing it close around the time they couldn't pass the ball to each other on that very, very mysteriously dry grass.
Yeah. Adam, there's plenty of games that have been... That City have gone on to win, and like you look at it from the outside, it looks quite a comfortable victory. But then when you sit there and you watch the 90 minutes, you're thinking, God, that was hard to watch. And I think it probably goes back to that Newcastle game in 2012 as one of the first ones that I remember that actually being a tough watch. But then again, you get to full time, you go, well, that was a good win.
Yeah, I mean, like we just mentioned, like the Burnley one, then the Forest one. Like the difference between those two games is in the Burnley game, which remember, City were in the ascendancy throughout, but couldn't really find a breakthrough, and it was Burnley's style of play that was so horrific. The Forest one, we could have got beat 6-0, and then the Newcastle one was so stressful because Newcastle were actually a good team back then. You know, like Forest fighting relegation, Burnley were at the bottom of the league, but Newcastle were going for Champions League, so it was really like when we were looking at the fixture list. 12 years ago now, and we were 8 points behind United. That looked like the one alongside United at home that could be, you can't even really call it a banana skin, just a game that City could lose. And we, I think that season we went to Stamford Bridge and lost 2-1. So, and Arsenal as well, we lost 1-0. So the away record was becoming a bit shaky towards the latter end of the season. And you were just sort of, I was worried anyway going into that game. But fortunately, yeah, we had Yaya Toure. But I was in the away end that game, and I recall it being utterly horrific.
Yeah, I think I'm interested though, because like you mentioned that United game. I'm interested that I don't feel it right to put that in here. And I think the reason is possibly because it's a derby, so you're nervous about it anyway. Yeah. But also, like when we saw the team sheets for that game, we saw, oh, United have come for a point. They've not come to try and win this game. So like there's in a lot of these, there's always the danger that City don't get over the line with what they want. But that derby doesn't feel quite right to go in there. I don't know why.
Yeah, I just sort of bracketed that because it was a derby, like one of those where, you know what Alex Ferguson was like? It was like United could just win any of those games. But you're right. And United actually, if I recall, didn't have a shot on target in that game. In that title running, I think the 1-0 win, I don't think they had a shot on target in that game. So yeah, Newcastle was the one. But yeah, like I said, I think the hardest games to watch in recent years have been the ones where City have been in the ascendancy entirely and we've just struggled to find the breakthrough. And you wonder, is it going to be one of those typical one of those days? And we've had a few of them over the years. But yeah, Newcastle, we got bailed out when, who was it he took off? Was it Tevez? And then... Tevez for De Jong, and then he pushed Toure forward.
Yeah. No, that's what people think. It's not. It's Sami Nasri that goes off for De Jong. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because De Jong's involved in the build-up, isn't he? Because everyone's booing him. But yeah, there was definitely the unleash Yaya substitution was sort of like the plan B, and a pretty good one as well.
Yeah. Was that one different, Dom, do you think, because it was City's first title as well? You think of some of these others, and like Adam mentioned the disparity in kind of opposition and like going up against teams that are fighting relegation compared to teams fighting for a Champions League spot. But this is also the first time City are going for it in kind of like a lot of our lifetimes.
Yeah, I think the point Adam makes is a good one, that it's against a good team. And I mean, insert your own Manchester United jokes. But that also applies to derbies as a general rule. But yeah, Newcastle were really good that year. See, compared to some of the others on the list, I do think, you know, with due respect, for it to be a really horrible running game, and obviously City of previous generations have had run-ins for promotion, run-ins against relegation, and they're kind of slightly different vibes again. But in this title running, I do think to ratchet up the horribleness, you've got to be playing someone who are a bit rank, really.
Like Forest and Burnley, yeah.
And that Newcastle game, you know, they were a really good side under old Pardiola that year, weren't they? And the other thing I remember at that game, maybe that game doesn't seem as stressful in hindsight because of what it came in between. Like, you know, I would argue still the most consequential Manchester derby ever, maybe. Yeah. And then obviously we all know what happened after the Newcastle game. My memory of that day, and this is probably and one of the things that feeds into what makes things stressful, whether you're watching on TV, on the radio, in the ground, in whatever capacity you're in the ground in. Adam was saying it really tense in the away on that day. I am watching that on telly and just in relative terms, obviously, I mean, you know, if someone can probably tell me I was behaving like a loon, but I remember being fairly calm at this because I think City played really well against a really good team for the whole game. And it was like, you almost felt like it was going to come. And obviously Toure scored, and it's a little bit unfortunate for Yaya really that first goal at St. James's in any normal circumstances would have been the moment, the title-winning goal. I remember it feeling like that at the time, and obviously the lads had other things in store the next weekend. But yeah, I think that of the list you put together, that one doesn't rank too high up for me. When penultimate game away from home, it really should do, but I think for those reasons, it doesn't quite. Well, go top of the anxiety meter.
Yeah, but there's others that are kind of like penultimate game sort of scenario. Because you think of that Leicester game at home where Company belts it in from range. And you think of, Everton in 2014 wasn't the penultimate game. It was the third last game, I think. But like you think of that kind of like those things. Is there any sort of element to teams where City have a bit of a dodgy record as well? Because Leicester at home has always caused City problems, certainly since they moved to the Etihad. And Everton away at that point, I mean, Everton was, you could go back decades and only get single figures wins at Goodison Park for City. So like, is there any idea that you're facing a bogey team as well in that running? And I say that, Dom, with my eyes firmly on that Spurs game coming up.
Yeah, now that Everton game felt disgusting. But again, that could be a particular circumstance for myself. So I wasn't at the game, but I was working for a company at the time that a big thing they did was like on the whistle match report. So, and this is a general thing for you sort of writing in the last 10 minutes of games, but their big thing was your intro and everything in on 85 minutes, so it's good to go. So I'd written, Man City took a massive step towards the league title with 85 minutes to go. And bear in mind that Eddie Dzeko's lying down, didn't he?
Yeah, he had a bit of a kip, yeah.
So because Dzeko was like having a nap in the middle of Goodison, I had this sort of written City of, you know, big steps towards the title thing that I'd said that was written down. You know, you go, you've jinxed it, or that sort of thing. I was just staring at this black and white jinx on my screen while Eddie was rolling around. But it felt like that injury time was about half an hour. So that felt particularly minging. But that's an unusual one, because I mean, I've noticed there's a lot of 1-0s in this list. That was, I think if you were watching that as a neutral, that was objectively a really good game. You know, both teams led. Hart made that unbelievable save. Aguero kicked the ball so hard he ripped his thigh pretty much on his goal. There was a lot of good stuff going on there. The Leicester one is like, I don't know, but I think because of the way they win that with the Company goal, rather than like Aguero getting it a couple of millimetres over the line at Burnley and things like that, that kind of becomes its own thing in my mind. That sort of felt like an out-of-body experience in the ground last night, that night when he hit that. And it almost, in your memory, that becomes more about the goal itself rather than the
grimness of the game. Yeah.
Yeah, the ransoms for it. Interesting question for you both, though. What is the worst miss out of Coletti, Iheanacho and Chris Wood? They're absolute rotters, aren't they?
I was going to say
both match fixing.
Yeah, I was going to say this, Adam. Does there have to be an element of City have got off the hook here? Like Iheanacho missing, Chris Wood missing, but also like the scoreline playing into it as well. The fact that it was, you know, Everton 2, City 3, you know, City 1, Leicester 0, Burnley 0, City 1. Like the fact that it's so tight and players have missed, does that play into it being a horrible watch as well?
Yeah, definitely, because that's like, it's a whole cliche, like hiding behind the couch. But the one thing I'll say, so am I allowed to disagree on this podcast?
You can disagree with what you want, yeah.
So if I was doing like top 10 hardest City games to watch, I don't think that Everton one would rank anywhere. I don't think getting my top 30. So I went with my dad that day, and we were in, my neighbour at the time was an Everton season ticket holder, but like in corporate. So me and my dad were in the Gladys Street end that day. And if you remember the context of the season, obviously it was us and Liverpool gunning for the title. I can tell you now with a surety, Everton did not want to win that game of football, right? And I think there's some parallels to be drawn with what we're going to be facing when we go to Tottenham on that Wednesday night, because Spurs may well be out the top four race by then. And the threat of them winning that game would be Arsenal winning the title.
Yeah.
So I'd expect them to roll over and let us tickle their bellies, to be honest, similar to what Everton did. Because if you think of, okay, so Lukaku, I think, missed a sitter in that game, and that's the one you're referring to, I think, and it was horrific. Or Joe Hart pulled off, like, oh no,
Naismith.
That was it, Naismith. Yeah, Lukaku scored. So Naismith, and it was a fantastic save. But the goal in the first half from Everton was just, it was a worldie from Ross Barkley, one that, you know, he didn't score for another decade till he started playing for Luton Town. So, yeah, I thought we were relatively in control at Everton.
Yeah, but lifelong Evertonian Ross Barkley never got the memo, did he? Banging one in the top corner. I think you're right, that Tottenham game could be very, very strange, but I think that is an atmosphere thing. In terms of professional pride and like the managers involved, they're going to want to win that game. I think the more pertinent thing for City in that Spurs game is that, and again, this goes back to what makes a horrible running game. It's like the type of opponent you're playing. Postecoglou isn't a massive, you know, dark art shithouse like Conte or Mourinho or Nuno or, you know, insert Tottenham manager's name here. So that probably makes that one, that's going to make that a bit different now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Tottenham, Dom, I want to go back to 2019. 20th of April 2019, there were five games left. Spurs had just knocked City out of the Champions League in heartbreaking fashion in the midweek. And then they're coming back to the Etihad for the early kickoff on the Saturday, and City just have to win to keep pace with Liverpool. They win, they get topped by a point, and everything was on the line. Foden 1-0 after 5 minutes, and it finishes 1-0. Is it grim to watch? Like, Spurs got in behind four or five times in the first half as well. Is it grim to watch when City are leading and hanging on or trying to make the breakthrough? Which is the worst?
I don't know. They're both rubbish, aren't they? But I think the fact you've got the goal is, and if you concede, then there's like, you can always go again. But yeah, hanging on for 85 minutes is something that, I mean, I would venture that in his 300 Premier League games, there are no other 1-0 wins for Guardiola where City have taken the lead in 5 minutes. If City take the lead in the fifth minute, it's normally win comfortably or lose 3-2 to Crystal Palace.
Yeah, he had one at Arsenal, though, where Sterling scored inside like 90 seconds and they won 1-0.
That's right. Yeah, that was the behind the closed door season. Yeah. Behind the closed doors? Something like that. Anyway, so that game was... That's the last time until Madrid that City had got knocked out in a two-legged Champions League quarterfinal. And I think there are a lot of parallels between that game and how it unfolded and the FA Cup semi-final just gone against Chelsea in terms of the players were, you know, mentally and emotionally knackered. But it was like Guardiola decided, no, you're all going to go out and go for it again. With the exception being Foden, who was sort of chucked in for, you know, youthful exuberance again in that Spurs game. But I think in terms of quality of performance, but also quality of, you know, character and personality, I think there's similarities there. But yeah, that was, it's a long old time tag on to win the league, particularly when you keep letting Son Heung-min in through on goal against City.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Loves it against City as well. And that, I mean, there's always the potential for that later on this season. Adam, is it worse home or away? If it's away, does it make it feel worse? Because you think of, like Dom said, the classic was that Burnley game and the fact that, you know, City squeezed it over the line in the second half. And then you've got the home fans, like everybody willing that equaliser. Is it away from home? Is it a lot worse? Or with the Etihad tension, does that add to it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it, really? I think I dislike it more when we're away for two reasons. Reason one, if we're at home, I'm definitely there and therefore might be a bit drunk, therefore it numbs the pain slightly. And then reason two, if you're away and you're not there, I almost feel like if you're watching it on the telly, or I get this sense anyway, there's almost like a... I know that we have no say on what goes on the pitch anyway, but it feels like you're in limbo and there's a total like loss of control if you're watching it on the telly and you can't... I don't know. It's like it's the game, because you're not physically there. It's not tangible, and you can't really. It's hard to put my finger on, but I feel like I can will it on more if I'm there and I'm present. Mm. And if I'm watching it on the TV and I'm listening to Neville and Carragher and all this, it adds an air of helplessness. I don't know. I don't know what it is. So I definitely feel more confident as well with like the home record and the history that we've written at the Etihad now with like the likes of the Villa game and the QPR game. I always have an air of like at home, City will just find a way and they'll do it. And like I just do. Whereas away from home, you know, games like when Liverpool beat us 3-2 at Anfield in the title run in, things like that come into your memory. Yeah. We tend to slip up more away from home. And yeah, I mean, we keep going back to that Burnley one, but I remember watching that game that day and it was just horrific. And I think the fact I was watching it on the TV made me feel all the more helpless as we squirmed every single chance and then also squirmed the ball across the line when we did score the goal. So, yeah, away from home, definitely worse.
Yeah, 29.5 millimetres that crossed the line by. And it was enough for the 3 points.
Do you know what's mad about that season as well? Like, it was that goal and then the John Stones clearance. So it was like two goal line moments that basically stopped Liverpool from being invincible quadruple winners, near enough.
There you go. Well, I mean, so not all heroes wear capes. They often wear City shirts. Dom, Adam mentioned two final days there in QPR and Villa, and I purposely haven't included the final days in this because, like, there is a tension that comes with the final day title on the line sort of game anyway. Can it be too early in a running? Because I'm thinking a few people suggested the Everton game where Rodri was a little bit loose with his arms in the City penalty area towards the end, and City won 1-0. But that was the 26th of February. Is that too early?
Don't people just think of that as a run-in because Liverpool fans were still talking about it in the May?
Possibly, yeah.
So, yeah, fair enough. I mean, you know, they've sort of changed the narrative a bit there. I know what you mean. I mean, I think that's too early. I would generally say that after March international break is when you're into the big boy stuff. Having said that, that 1-0 Palace from last season that you also mentioned where Haaland got the late penalty, that felt very, very running. But
11th of March, yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, I guess when the running starts, it's a bit of a movable feast alongside where your opponents are in the table. So that Everton one, that was just after, I think that was around the time they'd drawn 0-0 at Palace. So like City were 3 points clear, but and I know Liverpool had had games in hand, but that had been whittled down from, like, I think about 12. So that felt really high pressure in a way that it wouldn't have done if, say, Liverpool were 7 points behind or, you know, things like that. Same thing. That Palace game, when Haaland scores late in 2023, that maybe wouldn't have felt as tense if City hadn't drawn 0-0 in the same game at a similar time the year before. I remember that Palace one being... And so this, yeah, Adam says about like watching at home, I'd mention. It's like watching at home on nights when Twitter just goes mad. I remember that Palace game being like about half an hour in, everyone had lost their head.
Yeah.
And that Haaland penalty is quite a long time after everyone's head had fallen off. So that made that one feel bad. Yeah, so there's all sorts of different elements. But with the watching on TV, and again, I know this is before the period we're looking at, but I guess we are lucky now with City being in title races and most games being on telly and various means to stream things. Title run-ins, away games on GMR, that was something else. like, I'm thinking Emil and Penza at Newcastle. Going way back, Stefan Karl at Southampton. Mm. Those were like, everyone, that was... I think the powerlessness of watching on TV was like times 100 on the radio.
Yeah, and especially when you're trying to stay up rather than go on and win the title. That's another anxiety-inducing thing there.
There's also the fact that obviously people will moan about like Carragher and Neville and things like that on TV, and you know everyone thinks various commentators hate certain teams. And that is, but that's kind of an outlet for people's stress. On GMR, you had like massive Berts on the radio losing their marbles. So yeah, that was something else.
Yeah, and Adam,
what's
to finish,
GMR?
Oh, don't do this, mate.
It used to be Greater Manchester Radio. It was before they rebranded as Beauty Manchester, yeah.
Adam, to finish, looking at City's fixture list, Wolves at home, Fulham away, Tottenham away, West Ham at home on the final day. The grimmest is clearly going to be that Spurs away game on the Tuesday night. Does the fact that City generally come through these and win them, does that give you any comfort going into it?
Yeah, I'm confident now. And look, this is how Manchester City do things. I will tell you now, Spurs won't be the most difficult out of those games for no reason whatsoever. There will be one of those that City make more hard work of than Tottenham, because that's how City do things. I won't be surprised if we won 3-0 at Tottenham and then absolutely slogged it at Craven Cottage or against Wolves on the weekend. Like, I honestly wouldn't. So I just think it depends, similar to what Dom said about like after the Chelsea game. What we've got to manage now is the mental and physical fatigue of the squad. And you'd like to think now we are really in the running and we know that it's in our hands. That should provide us a sole motivating factor for the players, regardless of what Pep even has to say to them. So I've got full confidence and full faith. And I think the fact that we got away with one, truth be told, to an extent this weekend against Forest, I think now we'll we'll learn from the mistakes, if you can call them mistakes, at Forest, really. And I think we'll tighten up and get the job done. I have full faith in it. But yeah, the Tottenham one, like I said, I just think it's going to be a weird game, that. And I really do think that, like, the way Postecoglou plays, in my opinion on Postecoglou, like, I think he's a very principled manager, and I think he plays good attacking football, but I think he's quite naive and not exactly pragmatic, and he leaves his team susceptible to being beat 5 or 6 at times. So I think it'll fall into City's hands a bit better than the likes of Nuno, Conte, Mourinho has. And I think by the time we get to the final day against West Ham, I think that'll be a wrap. So I'm looking at the next three, really. Let's get through those, win them. And to be honest, I know we've just gone on about how tough City's games have been in the past in previous title runnings, but I'm quite confident about this one that we'll get over the line and get the job done.
How's that for putting a jinx in black and white, Dom?
Yeah, there we go. No, I agree. I think the Fulham one is the sleeper in there. Is that everyone's talking about Tottenham? Fulham are that sort of the mid-table team where it can work both ways. You can be on the beach or you can be totally freed up. Fulham was really tricky last season. Marco Silva, another Portuguese manager who might like a dry pitch and might like to sort of like gum it up a bit. I think that's that one looks like the bit of the red flag in there, because I'd agree, Postecoglou is the best Tottenham manager since Pochettino, but I think he's also got the Tottenham team City are most likely to beat just because of how they play.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, they might have to after they've drawn at full. Okay. How about that?
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
Dom Farrell and Adam Monk there talking to me about grim City games to watch in title run-ins. We're going to look ahead now to the game with Wolves. And Chris, how important is having a week between this Forest game and the Wolves game? I mean, obviously, everybody would much rather have had Bayern Munich or even Arsenal in the Champions League. But having the opportunity to recover, rest and prepare with a week, you can't waste that opportunity, can you?
Yeah, definitely. It's very important, the amount of time we've got, because of just how knackered we look. You go this deep in this many competitions this often with this smaller squad, and it's going to eventually cumulatively take its toll, isn't it? And they didn't look knackered against Brighton, but they certainly did against Forest again. It was just a case of like grinding it out. So a week off will be most welcome, and I would hope and expect that against Wolves they'll be looking daisy fresh once again.
Yeah, if Forest was a tough watch, Adam, are you fearful that Wolves will be as well?
I think it'll be a tough game, but I think we'll be more fluid. Obviously, we play better at home. They've not got a great recent record at our place. I always feel a bit more in control, like Adam alluded to in the soundbite there. When you're at the game, there's a bit more or less nerves than when you watch it on telly. So I think there'll be an element of that for my personal selfish enjoyment of it. I think we know when we're in battle mode and we know what we need to do, the home games should be the easier tasks than the away ones. They've not got their manager, which is, incidentally, we didn't have Pep in the reverse fixture at Molineux. So it's weird how that's worked out. And we'll have a score to settle because of what happened earlier in the season. I don't think they'll pose too much. We're not going to have it all our own way. This will come back to bite me, so you can clip this one. This is the game I'm least worried about in the running.
Oh, well, he's done it now, hasn't he, Chris? There we go. That's it.
There's your headline.
Yeah, there's the problem.
There you go. That's negated all of my jinxy antics previously.
Yeah. Thank me later, everyone.
Yeah. That being said, Chris, I mean, Adam mentioned the game at Molineux. The big thing at Molineux was that City didn't have Rodri and didn't have Guardiola on the touchline. So when it comes to this one, can you just kind of park what happened at Molineux and not have any fears for this? Or is it a case of, you know, they worked out a way to beat us at home. They could cause a problem at the Etihad.
I think we'll have too much for them. We've got too many options. Rodri is the... We've had a week. We've got the beating heart of the team available, i.e. Rodders. And without... I think it does have an influence, the manager not being on the touchline, because if it didn't, they'd just take a nice comfy seat and direct proceedings from the stand every week, wouldn't they?
Yeah. But, and they wouldn't be that asked about getting a touchline ban, would they? So
exactly, yeah. And I've got a lot of time for O'Neill. He's basically talk the talk, put his money where his mouth is, and you know, he's doing pretty well. It surprised me a little when it surprised me a little that they signed him. I think a lot of Wolves fans were not exactly, you know, over the moon to see him come initially. And he was going on the telly, I don't know if it was on Sky or what, one of the channels, where he was quite offering himself up to talk tactics and analyse games, and it's like, oh, hello, you're confident. But he's gone on to prove that he is a pretty decent manager, hasn't he? So yeah, I think he'll be a miss. I don't want to jinx it, sat here like some overconfident shit pingu in this cushion igloo. But I think we'll have too much for them. And even if, you know, even if it isn't going well at first, we can change the way we play. And I'm not sure if we make a good start, if they can change things and turn it around in the way that we might, if the reverse is true.
Yeah, Adam Haaland from the start. I mean, he looked back and fit against Forest. He seems ready now for it.
Yeah, I think he did enough there as well. I was wondering before the Forest game how Haaland gets back inside. Not in like a dramatic, oh, he's rubbish, he's not doing anything. Just because we seem to have been finding a way without him. So it was always going to come back into a game from the bench. He's now done that. He's changed the game from the bench. And now I think he's done enough to just automatically be a starter again on that. Any fears I might have of him, us finding a way without him, we need him now for these type. And I think a lot of people after the Forest game, I saw a few headlines saying Haaland will be the difference in the title running now. And we need that Haaland to be that difference in the running. And I've pretty confident he will be now.
Yeah, there's not really many questions around that, is there? There is, though, at centre-back, Chris, because Diaz was ill for Forest. Stones has been coming back to fitness for a while and has been on the bench for a bit. Ake and Akanji were great, I thought. So we've got this issue now with, like, who are you picking out of this lot?
I'll probably leave as it is for now, is the short answer. Would you like me to expand?
It would help, yeah.
I just think, you know, you don't want to over-rotate. I know Diaz is a great leader, but Aki and Akanji, fantastic. I thought Guardiola was great. Walker, I mean, I don't know, he was dropping clangers like an arthritic puppeteer against Forest. I don't know whether he's putting that down to the pitch. It's helpful in a way to know that he was complaining about the pitch before the game, rather than after
that performance.
Dropped a few bollocks, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how fit they all are. I don't know what their levels are, and that's what it really comes down to at the moment, I think, in terms of selection, because you've got an array of players available to you there who are all capable of doing a great job. So when they're all on good form, I think it just comes down to, you know, who's best equipped fitness-wise to play, because they're all, you know, they're so well-versed with each other's game and the team play that they can all slot in. So fittest players, please.
Yeah. Wolves are safe, Adam. They've got no real chance of European football given Chelsea's games in hand. So they're probably going to finish mid-table. When you think back to City doing that in kind of like the mid-noughties or so, I always felt like the shackles came off rather than City down in tools. And there's obviously that one season where they lost Andy Cole and everything went to pants to the end of the season. I think they lost 9 of 10. But every other year when they got safe, it always felt like they'd kind of put in a brilliant performance, like away at Aston Villa or something like that.
That's the first one that came to mind. You can tell we're the same age because that is the era where when the sun came out, we seemed to have great ends to the season when nothing was riding on it. Just before the takeover, you know, there was some last end of season games that were almost carnival atmosphere. We had nothing to celebrate, but we were playing these. Now I'm thinking Sean Wright Phillips around that, you know, just. The sun was shining, nothing, no jeopardy, just go out and enjoy yourselves. Yeah, we never really just got absolutely battered from the time we were safe until the end of the season. So I'm hoping that'll play into our hands, though, because they're not going to be clinging on desperately for a result. They're going to play football, which in turn usually allows us to play football. Again, clip that with your headline. So I absolutely think they will play with a bit more freedom than, say, they need to if they were going for Europe or staving off relegation.
Yeah, although I've just realised that the probably the biggest example of that is that Sven season, and that culminated with a disastrous end to the season with the 8-1 at Middlesbrough. So, you know,
yeah, just delete the audio for the last 5 minutes then. Yeah.
We'll do the charity bet shortly, but first let's get a view from the other side. I've been speaking to Dave Azzopardi from Talking Wolves to find out more about their recent form.
It's been all right, to be honest. I think considering the circumstances when the season kicked off, with Lopetegui walking last minute and Gary O'Neill coming in with no pre-season, I think, you know, from the outside, it seemed that there were a lot of football fans thinking that Wolves were destined for the drop. So considering we've been mathematically safe for some time now, we were even flirting with the idea of potential European qualification just a few weeks ago. I think it's been a successful season. I think the players, you know, on Saturday, it was the first time we saw Hwang and Cunha start together since the end of December. We've not seen Neto, Cunha and Hwang start together since the end of October. So considering that's our best front three, the fact that Wolves have had their best scoring Premier League season in some time and, you know, being, you know, are where they are in the league, I think it's been an all right season in total, to be honest.
Yeah, just, I mean, in terms of Gary O'Neill as well, I remember speaking to you earlier in the season and kind of opinions seemed to be a bit split on him. What's the mood around him now?
Very positive around Gary O'Neill. I remember sort of when we were speaking last time, I'm fairly certain the game before that, we were actually knocked out in the Carabao Cup to Ipswich, and there were a lot of fans thinking we've made a big mistake here. And arguably that game against Man City, to be honest, kickstarted our season. Obviously, in terms of the stats, it looked like City, you know, walked all over us, but Gary O'Neill had a clear game plan going into that match. And he's not really looked back since. We've kept the same shape. Our form at Molineux after that was very, very strong. But yeah, a lot of fans are on his side. I think he's impressed us all. He had a lot of doubters when he first came in. So he's got those all on side now, really. And yeah, I think everyone was a bit frustrated that he wasn't backed at all in January. I think with one or two new signings, he could have kicked on a little bit more. But, you know, he's done a fantastic job considering. I think his stock in the managerial game has risen considerably now as well. A lot of Premier League clubs taking notice of that. But now he's starting, I think he knows how much credit he's got at the club. He's been sending subtle digs towards the board over the last few weeks in regards to backing him in the summer. So I think the club have got to do exactly that. Otherwise, I think he could walk or at least start flirting with other clubs a little bit more.
Yeah, and just on kind of like the change under O'Neill, you mentioned that City game and kind of how it might look from the stats that City were dominant. I don't think there's many City fans who will say that City deserved anything out of that game. So when it comes to a style of play, has he really nailed down kind of how he wants to play with this Wolves team? Is it much different to what Lopetegui was doing?
Yeah, I think with Lopetegui sort of picked a back four and sort of stuck with that. And for whatever reason, I remember under Lopetegui, whenever he tried to play with a back five, it was just horrific to watch. And Gary O'Neill was almost the opposite. He started with a back four. There were some positive signs, but for whatever reason, the results just weren't coming. And as soon as he switched to a back five, it's almost like it's ingrained into Wolves because we had such good success under Nuno with it as well. But he switched that back five against City, had that game plan, worked really well, and he sort of stuck to it ever since. Obviously, as a manager, you have to adapt game by game. But I think counter-attacking is where we are at our best. Against City, it'll be interesting because we're going to allow you a lot of the ball, and sometimes that does work better in our favour. I'd be interested to look at the exact stats. Whenever a team allows us a lot of the ball, we tend to struggle because we don't really know what to do with it. But on the counter-attack, we've been clinical. We've been deadly. We've got the double over Spurs playing that way. We've got the double over Chelsea playing that way. We've given United and Liverpool scares throughout the season. Obviously, we beat you guys as well. So counter-attacking is where it's at. But I think he's such a clever manager. For someone so, in a non-disrespectful way, for someone so inexperienced at top flight managerial status, you know, he's been fantastic and such a clever manager. And I do hope they back him because with certain players coming in the summer, I think he could surprise even more people next year.
Yeah. And you mentioned the players that you had back at the weekend, obviously with that 2-1 win over Luton's first win for a while. Is that symptomatic of a team that's safe and isn't going to get into Europe, that it's been a bit difficult towards the end of the season?
Yeah, it feels like a carbon copy of our last sort of 2-3 years, to be honest. I'll say, obviously, it was a bit different last year. Lopetegui sort of got us back into a good position where we could be safe. And then maybe, like, as soon as we were mathematically safe, it just fell off a cliff. And it sort of feels the same with this season. We had lost out in the FA Cup against Coventry. And sort of after that, that's where our form's, you know, nosedived, really. But I think Wolves know, you know, European qualifications are stretched too far. We're mathematically safe. I think the players have relaxed a little bit. He's had to rotate a little bit. He said with the amount of matches and the lack of squad depth, some certain players are sort of in the red zone as such, you know, physically. So he's had to rotate. And obviously, unfortunately, results have suffered because of that. But the Luton result was great. I think in terms of quality of football, it was much better. We created many more chances. But at the end of the day, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way to Luton, they are where they are because of a reason. And ultimately on paper and on the pitch, Wolves are way stronger than them. So this is going to be a completely different challenge for Wolves, especially away from home.
Yeah, who's been key to good performances this year? You mentioned only having the front three together for the first time since, I think, what, October, was it?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, Neto, Hwang and Cunha haven't played still since October, but Hwang and Cunha started on Saturday. That was the first time those two had started together since December. And you could tell the quality in terms of going forward, having confidence and the momentum when we had the ball. I think Cunha's the one. For me, I'm really surprised, not that I want it to happen, but I'm really surprised that there's not more big clubs linked with him. Because I think he's such a fantastic footballer, and
yeah, I've had a lot of fantasy league points out of Cunha this year that other people don't seem to have cottoned onto. So yeah,
yeah. So in turn, you know, he's hit double figures. You know, he sort of had a slow start to life last year since January, and then really kicked on this year. Just been a little bit unfortunate with fitness and injuries at times. The midfield too, Lamina and João Gomes, they've been fantastic as well. They've found a real nice connection between the two of those, and really kicked on. João Gomes is one that I'm sure there'll be a lot of suitors for in the summer, and Ryan Aitnori as well, another player that's been linked with many moves away. Just such a fantastic silky footballer. He makes life look easy, but even defensively as well, there's not many players, especially in big games, where I've seen Ryan Aitnori really struggle. Mo Salah's a perfect one. I've never ever seen Mo Salah have a good game against Ryan Aitnori. He's been fantastic. So I think there'll be, like I said, a lot of interest in those players, but if the midfield two are on it, and Lamina and Gomez, it could be an interesting game. But if Cunha's on it, it's going to be a completely different battle.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned the counter-attack. How do you expect Gary O'Neill to set up at weekend? We saw City struggled a little bit at Forest with Forest's back five. Are we expecting the same sort of thing from Wolves?
Yeah, it'll be back five, I would assume. Although we've only got at the moment two fit senior centre backs. So I'm sure he's hoping Santi Bueno's our third centre half is back fit for this game. He was hopeful last week. If not, he sort of played quite a fluid back three with Nelson Semedo and Matt Doherty sort of rotating between right centre-back and right wing-back. Although that worked against Luton, I would be worried against City. I think City would be able to exploit that and catch us out quite easily while doing that. But regardless, there will be a back five of some shape. And like I said earlier, I think Wolves will sit deep, allow City plenty of the ball, and then just try and launch counter-attacks when we can. It completely depends. I think if we had Neto involved, if he was fit, it could be a different story. But we're going to have to rely a lot on the quality and pace of Cunha and Hwang, who are both probably not 100% sharp just yet. So I would be intrigued to see how he sets up that attack in either two or three and how he aims to try and score goals in this match.
Yeah, and just looking at the league table, currently 11th, just behind Bournemouth. I'm guessing that Gary O'Neill will have his eyes set on finishing above Bournemouth. But in terms of what Wolves can achieve for the remainder of the season, what are you hoping for? Because you've got City away this weekend, Liverpool away on the final day, Crystal Palace at home in between.
Yeah, ultimately, I'm pretty satisfied with where we are. I just hope we don't drop too far down to sort of 13th, 14th, because I think, although at the start of the season, you would have taken that every day of the week, I think the fact that we were sort of fingertips, you know, away from maybe getting into European qualification and then just falling all the way down, I think to finish 14th will be a bit disappointing. But I don't know, I think if you can finish 10th, if a top half finish, I think would be amazing considering the circumstances. So, look, like you said, we've got some tough games involved. Palace at home, or Palace have really kicked on a little bit under the new management, but I always back us at Molineux. So, I think 3 points out of the last three would probably be enough to see us finish sort of 10th, 11th. So, I'd take that. I think considering what was happening at the start of the season, that would be a good season for Wolves.
Yeah, we've got the charity bet coming up, Dave. So, let's have your score prediction for this game. How do you think it'll go?
See, I normally bat Wolves on these, don't I? But I just can't see it happening this week, to be honest. So, you know what? I'll be semi-positive and I'll go with a 1-1 draw.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Dave Azzopardi from Talking Wolves. Time for the charity bet. We've raised £1,040 so far this season. William Hill is giving us three £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They'll be in the usual spot on Saturday under the bridge on the Asda side of the ground. Please go and see them with a donation if you can. They'll be there between 3 and 5pm. And through them, City fans are the biggest donors to Manchester Central Food Bank. So please help if you can. We've heard already that Dave has gone for a one-all draw. That is 18-1 and £180 if he is right. Adam, what are you having for this one?
I'm going to go for 3-0 and Haaland's going to get that all-important next goal.
3-0 with Haaland's next goal. Well, I don't know about the first goal scorer market, but 11-2 for 3-0 and £55 if you're right. Higgy, what are you having?
Manchester City 4, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1. I used to always love the way James Alexander Gordon kind of stirred Wanderers on every time he read out the final scores. You ever notice that?
I didn't, know. And now I literally can only think of Wolves and Wickham. Who else? Who else are Wanderers?
Bolton Wanderers.
Yeah. There we go. That's 14-1 and £140 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. Higgy, I was going to play the listener questions jingle, but you've got a new one already, haven't you?
Well, I mean, I didn't necessarily suggest that was for public consumption, David. It's, you know, embryonic stages and all that.
Well, in that case, we'll have to save it for a future episode, and we'll have to make do with...
It's the listeners' questions. It's the listeners' questions. Don't be giving us lots of flannel or suggesting it's Ask the Panel, because it's not called that. All right. It's called It's the Listener's Questions. Make it thoughtful or inventive. Trying to provide an answer incentive. It's the Listener's Questions. Thank you.
There we go. I mean, you record it once and it's going to be there till the end of time, mate.
That's my favourite part of the pod, to be honest.
It's a hard listen from this end.
Just you wait till we get the next one. Get in touch with your questions at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter. You can email through the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. That is what Dave B has done. He says, I don't think anyone will say that the win over Forest was one of City's best under Guardiola, but now he's reached 300 Premier League games. What are your top three performances under Pep in the Premier League? He goes on to say what his are, but I haven't told you to because I want you to kind of come to them organically. So, Adam, what would you like to throw into the ring for this?
So, for me, I want to put in the Arsenal game 3-0 away, March 2018. We scored the best goal we've ever seen under Pep, albeit from it went in off an Arsenal defender after Sane.
He shepherded it, didn't he?
Yeah, shepherded it in. Yeah, exactly that. So aesthetically, it was perfect until that last moment, which is, again, typical City. And I just think it was snowing, so the weather was against us. It didn't stop us playing beautiful football. Everyone was involved, free-flowing, away at the Emirates, 3-0. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
Yeah. Any others to chuck in there?
You've got two more,
and you've named one. Did you not do three?
Are we not a collective? Us three? Amigos?
Okay. Well, we can do it that way. Higgy, this is where Higgy's picked the same one as this number one. So then we end up with the top three of the same three games.
Well, I've got three, but they're badly. I'm not happy with them. So you say yours, and I'll just pick one of mine that isn't yours. If we do clash,
this has absolutely been a car crash because I didn't. Yeah,
I fucked up there.
Yeah, I didn't do a top I've three because I was going to just throw it to you two. So I tell you what, I'll give you Dave's, shall I? Dave's top three. He says for me, it'd have to be the 7-2 win over Stoke in 2017, the 3-1 win at Arsenal right after we'd beaten them in the League Cup final in 2018. Was it 3-0 or 3-1? I thought it was 3-0. Adam, one of you or Dave has got that wrong. We'll find out live in a second.
My one's a 3-0.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Dave said it was 3-1, so we'll find out. And the 3-1 win at Stamford Bridge over Christmas behind closed doors. Three absolutely comprehensive performances, is what he said. Higgy, any of yours clash there?
No, actually. I've gone for the 2-1 home win against Liverpool in, was it? 2019,
January 2019. Cracking performance. Yeah.
Because Liverpool hadn't lost for ages. We were putting a good run together. they were top of the table and just kind of looking over their shoulders thinking, oh God, not these guys. And they had that Stones clearance. It was at night, which always adds a bit of, I don't know, it just makes it better.
The goals as well, Aguero near post, Sane off the post, fantastic finishes. Yeah,
fantastic goals. had a bit of drama in it as well because they equalised, didn't they, Liverpool, quite soon after, I think. Was it Firmino?
Yeah, so it was certainly second half. It was quite, it must have been quite, I think we took the lead pretty quickly after they equalised. I think the two goals were close to each other in the second half, yeah.
But the Aguero goal is just one of the best near post finishes from one of the best near post finishers that you'll ever see. And the way he peeled away with blood streaming down his leg, it was just a sight to behold. I've got a photo of it on my desk.
Class.
And the Sane goal was fantastic. The atmosphere was electric. It was just, it was an amazing night. I've also gone for, and it's a bit recent, this one, but the Arsenal game last year.
The Emirates. Oh, the Emirates,
yeah.
But you could pick either of those, I guess, really.
Yeah, the 3-1 away, with it being away, and with it just being just another hammer blow into the ambitions of your nearest rival, was just a really, really top performance. And although, again, this is quite recent again, the Spurs home game where we were 2-0 down at half-time, I suppose it's only half a performance, isn't it? But what a half.
Yeah, Guardiola wasn't happy with that performance though either. So I don't know if that, does that count against it?
Happy flowers, that one.
Yeah, that was the happy flowers game.
Well, I think he was probably happy with the bit that I was happy with when we scored four goals.
Oh yeah, because you and him are like that, aren't you? Like on the level with each other.
Yeah, with, similar animals. You know, he's copied my hairstyle and everything.
Yeah. So if we combine the three of us, then
I've shut out there. I can only apologise.
Yeah, we'll take that 3-1 win, 3-0 win at Arsenal.
Yeah.
with the beautiful team goal. We'll take the 2-1 against Liverpool, and then take your pick from the rest of them. The 7-2 over Stoke was a good performance, I guess. Maybe that one.
Yeah. Can I throw in the 6-0 against Watford in the FA Cup final?
Yeah, great performance, and on an occasion as well. Although Premier League only.
Oh God. This is tough.
Yeah. Come on, coming from a stats man like yourself.
I know, yeah. I've thrown myself because I've not read the question.
Yeah.
Piss poor preparation there. I can only apologise to you and the listeners.
You should apologise and think about your behaviour.
Yeah. I know, it's not acceptable.
Apology considered.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got Guardiola's record from the Premier League here. It is frankly ridiculous. Played 300, won 221, drawn 41, lost 38. His City team have scored 741 goals, conceded 247, have a goal difference of 494, and have amassed 704 points over his time at the club. That's a win rate of 73.7, 2.47 goals a game, 1.65 conceded a game, an average of 2.35 points per game. Chris, we will never, I like when Guardiola's gone, we're never going to see the like of this again, are we?
Absolutely correct. And we'll have the same, depending on the rule changes, we'll have the same kind of financial might that we have when he's here now. But no, I don't think we'll do as well, which will surely reflect that the reason we are doing so well over the last few years is more down to Pep than anything else.
Yeah. Adam, do you feel he hasn't had the credit he deserves? When you look at that record in black and white, he just doesn't get any credit for it, does he?
The next nearest manager, so Alex Ferguson, he's achieved 38 more wins in that time. So he'd have to lose the entire season just to be on the same level as the second next manager. Mm. And I know a lot of people will beat us with the 115 stick, and that's right if it is proven. But mind you, even regardless of that, he still has to put a team on the pitch over the white line at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, regardless of what it was built on. But that's me probably being a bit bitter with it all.
I should have checked actually how many of his games were 3 o'clock on a Saturday, because I bet of the 300, there's probably about 10. Yeah,
I could tell you. But I just think there's nowhere near enough credit, because he seriously needs to be in those conversations now. and people will say we're boring. It's only boring on the outside because it's so perfect. We've still got the jeopardy as City fans, so we know what goes into it and how much is at stake for these. Yeah. I understand why the neutrals might not give him enough credit, but absolutely, he deserves so much more than he currently gets. And hopefully, once we're cleared of all these charges, those conversations can start being had, because an extra season of 38 wins better than the next placed person is just off the scale.
Yeah.
And I think people find it boring because we keep winning. That's what's boring for them. I was very bored of United's dominance during the 90s. And they won what, like, didn't they win 8 out of 10 over a 10-year period? I don't know if it's an exact decade, but like, as in like 90 to 1000. But
yeah,
they won an inordinate amount of championships over a relatively short period of time. And people just seem to have such short memories, slagging us off for it. And we're doing it in such a more kind of aesthetically pleasing style. We're not bullying the press. We're not bullying referees. We're not bullying players. We're not fouling all over the place. We're not filthy animals. We're not dirty players. It's more skill, finesse, tactical nous, and beautiful football. So, yeah, how boring.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chris, as well, it's all come back round to the start of the show with your hat trick, because I don't know about you, but Guardiola's ruined football for me, because like me and you play together on Tuesdays sometimes, and the number of times I stand there with the ball at my feet in goal going, if I delay this pass a bit longer, whoever's going to receive it is going to have a little bit more time. And I never used to think about things like that. And just because I can't execute that pass properly doesn't mean that I'm not thinking about it, you know.
They say Guardiola hasn't changed Tuesday nights.
Exactly. Tuesday nights in Reddish have never been this complex with
the goalkeeping pauser.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so that's it for this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks also to my guests for this one, Adam Carter.
A pleasure.
And Chris Higginbottom.
Ta for having us.
There is a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show coming up. It is the top 10 Guardiola moments in interviews and press conferences, picked out by Dom Farrell and Sam Lee, and that's available for Patreon backers now. I'll be back next week to review the game with Wolves. We'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
John Stones had more personality than all of us here together in this room. More balls. So I am delighted to have John. With all his huge amount of mistakes they have. I love him.
A massive vote of confidence. I forgot about that bit. Despite how shit he is, he's fucking giving it a good go. So
it's huge balls and it's huge mistakes. I think that Liverpool draw, because he was pretty much on one, that Liverpool draw, because that was just after they got knocked out by Monaco.
Yeah.
And he also called it like it's one of the most proud days of his career. I think this one might be my personal favourite just because I'm really juvenile. and also it's the big balls. I mean, I'm doing this now and it's on audio. It's the hand gesture. Yeah. It's absolutely elite stuff.
Also, if you were going to do a really athletic deep dive on all the elements of a Guardiola press conference, you'd have some kind of hand movement, which knocks the mic on the way through.
Yeah.
And it's got it in there. When he says in this room, he bangs the mic. He does that fairly often as well.
Yeah. And then he apologizes.
Still hasn't grown out of that. He knows where the mics are by now.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.